just want to make a distinction between what I'll be talking about here today, very much focused on recall. Over the course of the several days at the conference, we've heard a lot about provider participation. And this is certainly one element of participation, but I think kind of imagine it as a stair-step function that says, you know, participate by submitting data, participate by assessing records. Well, this is kind of going to the top of the heap, I think, by saying we're going to not only submit data, not only assess children's up-to-date status, but we're going to use that information to determine whether or not they should be recalled or, in some cases, reminded for doses. So just think of that in the construct of kind of being a kind of a higher level use of registries. So I'll just give you a quick roadmap of what we'll be talking about this morning. I do want to spend just one or two slides talking about recall, and I may use reminder and recall interchangeably, I apologize. But I'll talk to you a little bit about that. I will walk through the specific study objectives of our study focused on the sustained use of recall by private providers. And then I will walk you through the balance of today's presentation. Of course, we'll focus on our findings. I just want to mention that this project is still in process. These are the first results that we're sharing here, so they're kind of hot off the press. I know you feel special. We'll talk to you about our experiences with site recruitment, which I think was really interesting. Give you some of our results from our knowledge, attitudes, and practices surveys from the providers, focusing in on their attitudes regarding registry use and recall, and then focusing on their sustained use of recall during the intervention. So just to get started then, reminder and recall, most of you probably know quite a bit about this, but that notification can occur in any number of ways. I think when we think of a reminder or recall, we most often think about mailed notification, but it certainly can be by telephone. And more these days, you certainly hear about either email or text messaging or other modes of contact. And anyway, what you're doing is you're just prompting, you're notifying in some way an individual that is either due for a dose or overdue, or in the case of a reminder, is going to be due at some future date. Those prompts can also be delivered by clinical information systems. I just want to point that out, like to providers, there can be reminder prompts when patient records are pulled up. But throughout all of this, the backdrop to keep in mind is that immunization information systems are kind of the backbone of this. It's the brain power and the infrastructure that enables us to understand who's gotten which doses and who's coming due. So the balance of our talk this morning is going to focus on that key component of using immunization information systems for recall. So just to condense a whole body of literature into one bullet, there's a fair amount of evidence out there that suggests that reminder and recall are amongst the most effective mechanisms to bring coverage rates up. There's some mix in that evidence. Some findings are stronger than others, telephone versus mail, but the bottom line consensus is that it is definitely one of the most effective methods to positively impact coverage rates. So with that in mind then, where do these reminders or recalls come from? Well, they certainly can be delivered by health departments, local health departments, or state agencies. Health plans commonly use reminders for immunizations. And certainly primary care providers can be involved with using reminders. But we know also from the literature that at this point, very few private providers use reminder and recall. So just to pause there for a second, we know, again, from conference presentations this week, there's more and more private provider participation. But I just want to kind of dissect that term. Participation here means not submitting your data or looking at the registry. This means like using it for assessment and sending recalls. So this is a different level of use. And so we know that it's not commonly used by private providers. So we ask, you know, what are the barriers? Why is that? And can those barriers be removed or at least minimized? And if so, at what cost? And so our study that we pulled together is a collaborative effort between the Department of Community Health in the state of Michigan, as well as the Michigan Care Improvement Registry. heretofore known as MICR, and the Alliance for Immunization in Michigan, a large immunization coalition in Michigan. So I'm going to walk you through our study objectives. I'm going to focus especially on our first two objectives. There's three in total. The third is kind of a yet to be done because, as I mentioned, this project is still ongoing. So our first objective, then, is to assess the factors that facilitate or impede the use of recall by private providers. So we went about that by assessing provider knowledge, attitudes, and practices related to recall notification from a couple different perspectives. One, surveyed practice managers, so at kind of the upper level, the 20,000-foot view, so to speak, at the practices. But then at each of those practices, surveyed providers, so we have two perspectives, practice level and providers at those practices. As I mentioned, we collected data from those practices through surveys, and just to walk you through very quickly the type of information, lots of characteristic information about the practice itself, the number and specialties of physicians, the typical volume of immunizations delivered at those sites, whether or not they are currently using electronic medical records, their past recall experience, and again, just to set the stage here, this is all being done a priori before the intervention, so this is baseline fact gathering before we do any sort of intervention with these folks. We want to know what their recall experience has been up to that point and what their attitudes are regarding that experience, as well as their ongoing registry use. Are they actively using the registry? Because again, that's the mechanism by which this recall intervention will be conducted, and any problems that they've encountered. Now, flipping to now the provider aspect, we also collected information from the individual providers at those sites. Again, some basic characteristics about the provider types and so forth, but we really focused on this pre-intervention understanding of their use of registry information. Are these, for the most part, these are physicians, but some nurse practitioners and nurses, are they using the registry information actively before the intervention? And then, very importantly, their attitudes regarding recall. That's what this is all about. What do they think about its potential benefits and potential problems? So our second objective was to then, once we have that information in hand, to develop a program to overcome those barriers to recall and encourage the sustained use of recall. And if I don't stress that word sustained enough, I apologize, but that actually is an important part of this project. It's not just a one-time deal. We're trying to get providers to sustain their use over time, and I'll define that as we go along here. But in order to do that, we crafted an intervention in which we offered the following. All the sites that were participating were provided on-site recall training by our MICR regional staff and training experts, which was key to the specific characteristics of those sites. So the MICR reps know these sites. They know these folks. We've gathered information now from these knowledge, attitudes, and practices surveys, so we have a little bit better bead on what's going on and if there are any clues as to barriers. Those that information combines to help individualize that training on site. And beyond just the training, though, an important part of this is once they're trained and ready to go and they understand how recall works, it's actually getting them established with this with patient rosters. And for those of you less familiar with that terminology, it's basically your patient list for your patients that you believe are actively being seen and immunized by your physicians, and you want to basically move out those kids who are no longer being seen by your practice. You definitely want to get all the kids in there that are being seen by your practice. That's key because that's like your little practice denominator, and that's how what recall is going to work against. So it's real key that be cleaned up and accurate. So that's a big part of the support that was provided to get that roster established and help them understand how to keep that up to date and keep it clean, so to speak. We also provided material support for the recall in the form of supplies such as paper, envelopes, postage, even toner cartridge reimbursement. Basically, we wanted to reimburse them from any material costs associated with conducting this recall intervention. And then as recalls were conducted, following up that, our MICR staff would contact the sites and make sure they could follow up with them regarding what their experiences were with those recalls, whether they ran into any problems, how to deal with those problems so that as they move into the next recall cycle, they could hopefully avoid such process problems. And our goal through this was to conduct at least 4 recall cycles over the course of a year. So we're looking at our goal was about a quarterly recall. And so there's a little bit of flex in that, but that was the basic idea. So our third objective, which again I'll just mention to let you know what else is to come, but you won't see results from this piece because we haven't moved into this phase yet. We're going to be looking at steps to test the effectiveness of the program. And very briefly, we're going to contrast what we've collected prior to the intervention with post-intervention data collection, looking at first their sustained use of recall or whether or not they did, as well as providers' knowledge, attitudes, and practices post-recall compared to pre. As well as vaccination coverage, both in terms of up-to-date status and age-appropriate status. And importantly, we're going to measure private provider costs. So basically, when it's all said and done, they've conducted these recalls, what's the bang for the buck? That's what the third phase of this we'll be looking at. So, okay, so how do we go about doing this? Our study site was a set of intervention and control communities in the greater Detroit area. Those communities were selected based on the underlying demographics. We looked at census data for children in those zip codes and census tract, trying to align these two areas so they had essentially the same composition in terms of age and race composition, so we'd have those two factors controlled for. And then also looking at the provider population in those areas, that there was a balance there, a diversity of private providers furnishing childhood immunization. So that's the basic recipe that we followed to select these areas. So I'm going to talk to you a bit about now our first findings, which shift to the site recruitment phase, which I think is really interesting and somewhat of a tale of woe, which I will share with you at this point. It all started about a year ago, a little over a year ago, February 07, is when our recruitment started. And the recruitment process was pretty straightforward. Invitation letters were sent by priority mail with follow-up by telephone calls, and the idea being to contact the practice manager or other key stakeholder decision maker at those practices, invite them to participate, brief them on the intervention and the benefits of participating. But that follow-up ultimately would result in hopefully the practices agreeing to participate, and then we would administer our knowledge, attitudes, and practices survey to the practice manager, as well as providing them with surveys to furnish to their providers on site. So for those of you, let's see if I can do this, oh boy. That. So we've got the Southeast Michigan corner of the state where, of course, Detroit is. I'm going to zoom in on that hopefully here. And the counties surrounding Detroit basically are where we're going to be looking here. There's Inner Detroit, which is surrounded by Wayne County, and then to the north, Oakland County. And I'm hesitant to use this pointer because it also will activate a page change here. So, hopefully you can see that lightly shaded green area radiating out from the center of Detroit on northward through Oakland County to the border of Oakland County. That is our intervention area. And again, those are zip code boundaries. That was our selected area for our intervention. In that area, we identified 60 eligible private provider sites. By eligible, I mean sites that are actively providing childhood immunizations. And so those were the eligibles. By contacting them, going through on a case-by-case basis, trying to get them to participate in the study, we ended up with a whopping 17 sites participating, which was, I don't take it personally, but it was not our high point there. I felt like that we should have higher participation, but it's I think definitely an important point to pause and recognize that this is a bit of an uphill battle, and sites, especially in the city of Detroit, were not fighting to participate in this study. I will note it. I will draw your attention, if I can get this cursor to operate, you'll see these sites along here. Those are actually in Detroit, and obviously if you can see the shading, they're actually not in our shaded area. What happened is we got a 5-for-1 deal. We had one site, actually in April of last year, we had 0 sites in the city of Detroit, which gives you a little sense of how successful we were in the inner city of Detroit. We had no sites. Well, then we finally recruited one, and that site was essentially co-managed with 4 other sites, which joined, so we got 5-for-1. And those four sites are outside the area for that reason. But happy to have them. They're in the city of Detroit. Come on board. So now the control area, a set of zip codes radiating to the northwest, again, starting in the city of Detroit and going out through the suburban Oakland County, again, matched by demographics and practice sites. But what I, at this point, given our somewhat disappointing recruitment success, okay, we have 17 sites at this point. Well, both of these areas roughly had 60 or so practices to start with. We sought that that degree of balance at the outset. So there was actually like 64 sites in Oakland County in our control area. And I thought, well, that doesn't make sense. We're going to have 17 intervention sites and 60 control sites. I think we're going to borrow from that. And so to do this in a randomized fashion, what we did was we identified the census tracts in our control area and randomized our practices into either an intervention or control set so that we could borrow from them and send some of those practices over to the intervention side. By doing that, we randomly selected 32 additional eligible sites with a whopping four sites participating, bringing us up to our current total of 21 sites. So the balance of what I'll share with you this morning is reflecting our 21 sites in the greater Detroit area. So before I leave site recruitment, I will just underscore that recruitment was and is challenging, especially in inner city Detroit. It just did not go smoothly, and it was a lot of work for, you know, high pain, low gain, I suppose you could say. But the reason for non-participation were somewhat of a common theme. They don't have the time or any other variation on that. We're real busy right now, but maybe next year, et cetera, et cetera. So time was a really big issue. And then there's always a number of them that would identify that actually recall of patients amongst their patients was actually not necessary because they're basically all up to date. So that's good to know that those public health successes are out there. You need not check. They are up to date. So, and then there's the ubiquitous, sorry, the doctor's not interested and we're just not willing to be involved with your study. I don't know, maybe they're Ohio State graduates or something. I'm not sure. Sorry. Shifting gears from recruitment to knowledge, attitudes, and practices. For this morning's discussion, I'm going to focus on the attitudes piece just in the interest of time. I'll give you a few perspectives. Again, remember I said that we looked at practice level, kind of the practice manager view, as well as a provider view. I'll start out with the practice level concerns as voiced by the practice managers of potential. Now, these are them identifying potential problems with using the registry in this recall intervention. This is a priori. So looking across the x-axis, you see these categories, which I'm guessing you can't read, but I will read you the key ones. Basically, if you draw your attention to the leftmost section of the charts, the two areas most commonly identified by practice managers as being anticipated problem areas were discrepancies between the registry and office records. Basically, they don't agree. That's what they were concerned with, as well as cost of involvement in the registry for recall purposes or the associated staff time. So those are two concerns. And again, kind of hold that thought. This theme is going to repeat itself throughout the next few slides. Now we're going to look at those same anticipated problem areas, this time focusing in on their anticipated problems with recall. And again, it kind of shifted the order, but the vast majority of practice managers, in this case about 87%, identified cost and staff time as being the most likely concern area for conducting recall. And then there was 53% did identify accuracy of address and patient data in the underlying registry information as being a concern area. This is not to say that there weren't other concern areas. I just was focusing in on those that had a majority of responses. There were obviously other responses regarding such concerns as confidentiality, inadequate technical support, potential problems with the registry itself, or some even thought the parents might not like it. But again, these were not the majority of responses. Now shifting gears over to the provider view. So we've talked to the practice managers. Now the practice managers gave surveys to their respective immunization providers at their sites. And if I didn't say it before, immunization providers were typically physicians, but also nurse practitioners and nurses. We did get a couple of them back that were actually written in as coming from a medical assistant, but that was not our intended group to survey, but that's what we got. So primarily physicians and nurses. So again, we're focusing in on their use of registry information before we get into the intervention. We want to know what their exposure has been to registry use, what their day-to-day uses are, and in particular, their attitudes regarding the potential benefits and potential problems of using a registry for recall. So let's just zoom in on a couple aspects of that. Provider concerns about potential recall problems. This is an interesting finding. Okay, so first, the full disclosure is most providers, I think, recognize the benefit of recall. They would speak, they would respond positively about the benefits. However, I just want to point out just kind of a few contrarian folks in our sample, which is despite the literature, despite what, I guess if you're in public health long enough or in this, you kind of, you know, go with this as kind of like with religious fervor, of course everybody likes recall. Well, no. A third of the physicians actually didn't think that there would be any benefit to reminding parents, which I just thought was really bizarre. But that's what they said. So, okay, so you do these recalls, and we don't think there's any benefit to it. Okay, good. I guess maybe if that's if you could generalize that to the other population of non-participants, maybe that's what's going on. They didn't think it was actually going to be helpful. But again, this is not the majority by any means. I just want to give you a flavor of what some folks out there, folks in the sense of providers, were thinking. These are immunization providers saying that, well, they didn't think it'd be useful in getting parents to come in, bring their kids in, or improving vaccination rates, or actually keeping their records complete. So there were some contrarian providers out there, not the majority, though. Okay, so let's look at their anticipated problem areas in using recall. Just to, again, zero in on our most common responses from our providers at these sites, 93% indicated that costs or staff time associated with recall was going to be a problem, and that the accuracy of patient data in the registry would be a problem. That was 75%, as well as they anticipated problems with the interface itself. So these were the key areas that were identified before the intervention as being likely areas of concern. Okay, so now we're gonna shift away from the a priori baseline stuff. Let's get into the actual intervention result. It's still ongoing, but these are you know, hot off the press. Here's the findings. So, since about exactly a year ago, we have trained 17 sites. 14 sites have actually conducted a recall, and actually in total 41 of them. And I'll just give you the breakout as you go through here. So like 2/3 have done at least one recall. 57% have done two recalls. 43% have done three recalls, and about a quarter have done four or more recalls. So remember, that was our goal, is to get four recalls over the course of the year. So a quarter of them kind of hit our goal. But if you do the math, that means seven sites have not conducted a recall over the course of the year. So that's an interesting group. We'll talk about them in a moment. But just along the way, since we are conducting the recall intervention, we've gathered a fair amount of information from talking to the sites. As I mentioned, the MICR coordinators are in the practices frequently. Our staff are following up frequently to observe what's going on. By and large, the overarching issues are staff availability or time-related issues. 81% of the practices have experienced one shape or fashion of this, including office being understaffed, staff turnover, or the lack of time. Now, 71% of the sites also indicated some, or we observed some degree of problem with executing the recall. And by that I mean either their patient roster was incomplete or inaccurate when they ran the recall, so basically they're not working off the right group of kids, they might have to go back and redo the recall, or very frequently the incomplete vaccination history. As you can appreciate, if you're running recall off a group of kids whose vaccination records aren't complete, you're going to generate a lot of recalls for kids who are actually complete. It's just that the registry hasn't been informed properly, and so therefore the recalls are spurious. They're not correct. So then the last bullet, which is kind of the catch-all of every variation on the theme you can imagine, which is they ran the recalls, but they didn't retrieve them. They retrieved them, but they didn't mail them. They mailed them, but they didn't confirm them. So that was a common issue. And by confirmation, I just want to point out, because that perhaps is MICR terminology, but it's basically saying, okay, this is the real deal. This was not a training exercise. This was not a test. Our staff mailed this recall, and so you hit the button, and it marks internally in MICR that those kids, each one of them in that recall, have been sent a recall notification, which, of course, is important to block them, in the case of MICR, for 90 days from getting other recall notifications. So that's important, and most of them didn't do it. Just another catch-all category, participation problems, you know, issues. They had agreed to conduct the recalls, but we have a third of the sites who haven't done anything yet, and that to me is non-participation. So incomplete reporting, that happened commonly as well. A couple other things just to round this out, registry functionality problems. There were occasions where the site's ready, trained, ready to go, run the recall, and it didn't work right. Something was wrong. At that moment in time, the registry would not behave properly, and the MICR coordinators had to intervene, do what they needed to do to get that recall to actually operate. So there was a little bit of issue there occasionally, 43% of the time. And a third of the time, we noticed that incomplete data transfers were the culprit for basically inaccurate recalls being generated. The sites had electronic transfers. They weren't doing it often enough, or they weren't doing it right. So again, MICR was not informed properly of doses. And then lastly, the additional training required. We had quite a number of situations where, again, for the time and staff turnover issue, if you have staff turnover, staff not available, other people had to get pulled in, retraining occurred frequently. So with that shift of our conclusions from this, I would say that first and foremost, most private providers recognize the benefits associated with recall notification, but some private providers may experience substantial barriers to actually conducting those immunization recalls, and these barriers may be especially challenging amongst the inner city practices. Private providers frequently experience staff availability problems related to recalls, and that's kind of a, should have been maybe bold-faced and highlighted. But despite training and technical support, the sustained use of recall by private providers may be hampered by what we observe to be common barriers. So from that, at least at this point, I would say the implications are perhaps recall mechanisms other than those conducted by private providers may be needed to augment those recalls, especially in inner city areas. So I don't know that we can really rely on private providers as the backbone of our recall support. So just a quick view as I close here on our upcoming steps. As I noted, we're still in the middle, well, not in the middle, toward the end of this project now, but we're still conducting recalls. We will continue to do that, wrap it up, gather that information, then we'll move into the assessment phase where we're looking at immunization coverage, up-to-date status, and age appropriate. We'll be looking at that post-intervention knowledge, attitudes, and practice analyses, comparing the control sites with the intervention sites, and of course, the cost analysis. So as I wrap here, many thanks to my colleagues at University of Michigan, Michigan Department of Community Health, and a big shout out to the Michigan Care Improvement Registry folks who made this possible, because without them, this would have been a non-starter. Great help from those folks, as well as our partners in the Alliance for Immunization in Michigan Coalition, and last but not least, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that funded this study. So I will leave you with a cheery spring view from that's what Lake Michigan looks like at this time of the year. So the waves are kind of caught in motion there, but. You know, if you're an optimist like me, you know, spring is around the corner. I believe that would be today. And, you know, have faith. It'll come. It'll come. So thank you very much.
Okay, we have some time left for some questions. If anybody has questions for either Anna or Kevin, please approach the microphone.
I have a question for Kevin. So you got CDC funding for this, and I was intrigued by, you know, telling the respondents that you would reimburse them for their various costs. How do you ease them into the fact that after the study period, they're not going to have that? How do you keep them from just falling off?
That's a great question. And at the outset of this, I had somehow imagined that, okay, one of the barriers is going to be, you know, the cost of running the recalls, you know, the postage and whatever. And you will hear that as being an issue. But what we're not reimbursing them for, which is, I think, the barrier, which is, you know, the 1,000-pound gorilla, so to speak, which is the staff time. You know, so we pay for their postage, the 41 cents a pop or whatever. Some of these sites are sending out hundreds here, hundreds there. It's real money. So the reimbursement does level things out a little bit. So I'm not sure that there's going to be a gigantic drop, or I guess a stair step up, of cost for these sites. If we look at their practices so far, they're not sending out huge numbers of recalls, because actually a lot of these kids are up to date. There was some truth to that. But it's just the time involved. And so I would say that that's the part that's, you know, that's leveled through this intervention, is we're not reimbursing them now for their time, and that's not going to be reimbursed, you know, after the intervention's over. But so I guess to answer your question, I don't think there's going to be a gigantic awakening that, oh, my gosh, we're now suffering some giant cost, because I don't think that they're really experiencing that much. We haven't tallied up the cost numbers yet, though. That's my back-of-the-envelope assessment.